anecdotes about that story. Ralph Shaw was great. He wrote me this letter afterwards, which I must have in a file somewhere. Dear Garfield, as a documentalist, you make a great caterer. Because what I had organized was a luncheon buffet, which was catered by the chef from the Johns Hopkins Hospital. And it was held in the Great Hall of Welch Medical Library. Have you ever been to the Welch Library?
No.
Oh. Well, that's the hall where you got this famous painting of the four doctors. You know. And it was a beautiful affair. Mm. So everybody got well fed. And I think there were coffee breaks and so on. We marched them around demonstrating demonstrated the 101 and gave these talks. I'm trying.
Was Larkey really sick?
Was he really sick? How do I know? How could I know?
I gathered, say, from what you had said in the previous interview that you doubted it, but I wasn't.
Well, I doubted it, yes. Of course I doubted it, because he might have had a drink too many, but that would have been a little more reason he drank more heavily to cover it up.
Yeah. No.
To my recollection, he showed up a day or two later.
Oh, yeah. Talk about your impressions of some of the folks who were there who stand out in the field. You mentioned Ralph Shaw already. What were your impressions of him at the time?
Oh, he was Ralph Shaw was a brilliant, most fastest talking person I had ever met. He was somebody who, if you had to deal with him in a debate or he came back. His repartee was so fast. Not necessarily he was right, but he just could disarm you. Very well, but he was also a brilliant guy and very successful administrator. You know, he was run the Department of Agriculture Library, and he was involved with the rabbit selector and so forth. And later on, you know, I had a personal encounter with him that was very, very significant. He became the dean of the library school at Rutgers, and while I was still at Columbia, he was in touch with me about the possibility of my becoming an assistant professor. And at the last minute, he turned me down because he was looking for and got a guy named Lowell Martin. Different kind of person,
yeah.
And it would have changed my life if I had gone there. But who knows? So.
Calvin Moores?
What about Calvin Moores?
Your impression. He was at the meeting also.
Was he? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Calvin was there. Yeah. Do you know?
Mrs. Schultz said.
He came?
She got into an argument with him at the meeting.
So. Oh, Cher Claire was there?
Right, yeah.
Oh, God. I got in or she got in?
She did.
What about?
I can't remember now what she said.
Well, Calvin, I had met him before. He came. He came to the project.
Oh, he did.
Oh, yeah. I met him before that meeting or after. I'm sure it was before. Oh, yeah. It had to be before.
Mrs. Schultz describes him sort of as the person who was always afraid you were going to steal his ideas.
Yeah, he was paranoid.
Was he?
Yeah. I mean, in that sense, you know, very unfortunate. I'm sure his stuff would have been much more widely understood and adopted if he hadn't been. Yeah. And he wasn't all that good a businessman, you know. But I mean, he was really a kind of reclusive researcher.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. The fact that he never was involved with ACES. He never was involved with ADI. If he was involved with any organization, maybe it was some mathematical. He probably felt more comfortable with mathematicians than he did with information people.
Mortimer Cobb, who was also there.
Yes, Mort is a very interesting personality. Very he and I, and we got along basically very fine. And I remember when he first went into business, he proudly told me what he was going to be doing and described the unit term system to me and so forth. But he got annoyed at me later on after I left the project and I started my company, and I called it Documation. D, capital D-O-C-U, right. Capital M-A.
Right.
And he had documentation, and you know, people are that way. And
did he try to sue you or anything?
I don't remember if he did or did not, but Documation remained until it became Eugene Garfield Associates, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Folks describe him as a publicist, a salesman for Documentation.
Cobby?
Cobby.
Well, he was a salesman. Yeah, I mean, definitely. He's like me in that respect. I mean, he believed in his product, and he was a good salesman. Yeah. He was a good communicator.
Was he effective at delivering his product? In terms
for
of
quite a while, they did. I think until they ran into serious problems with the concept. I mean, you know, in theory, it sounded good, but I think when it got into big numbers, it fell apart.
Big numbers of size.
Large, yeah. You'd have to ask. I mean, it got involved with Thermotrex they were trying to put it on machines after a while, right?
Right.
So it seemed to me to be it's like an oxymoron, because the unit term system had been not proposed as a machine system. Although I don't know whether there's a contradiction or not there. I can't remember all that well.
But was Taub likable?
Oh, he's a very, very nice personality. Yeah. Mort? Oh, he was a very sweet guy. Yeah. What, is there any doubt about it?
No, I'm reading his stuff, and his stuff is written really...
He's a philosopher.
Sort of held, you know...
dogmatic?
Devil take the hindmost kind of thing, particularly in his attitudes about librarians.
Well, he was cocky. Yeah, he was cocky. Yeah. I mean, librarians, after all, they weren't perfect by any means. An incredibly conservative group. I'm sure that...
John Mockley was also at that meeting.
He was? I don't specifically know. I'm not surprised if he was. But
No impressions based on that meeting?
Well, I had met him, too, separately.
Oh, you had?
Oh, yeah.
He had been down to look to
yes.
what you were doing?
He came to see me. Well, later on, he and I became very close friends. It was when I came to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I met him. Claire knew him, too.
Right.
So it was sad what happened to him. Different thing. He was also not a businessman. He's not a... You know, somebody could say I wasn't either, you know, I mean, in the sense that I was not the large corporate type. You know, this company, even after it's had 700 people, was treated like a family, not a business.
Back to Tom, was he a business type? The corporate type?
Well, I don't think he was around long enough to find out.
Yeah.
I mean, the company became fairly big right away because they got that NASA contract.
Right.
Okay.
Mrs. Schultz describes Mockley, and she was working for him for a couple of years, as not a vice president. They had made him a vice president at Sperry Rand, and that he was a researcher, and that this was part of the reason for the failure, not of him so much, but of that whole UNIVAC system. Was that your impression? Did you know him in this? Were you involved with him in the late 50s?
No. It was a result of what? I don't understand the question.
That he had gotten promoted to a vice president.
When he was promoted to a vice president and taken out of research, is that it?
I think so, in development work anyway.
Could very well be. Could very well be that it was a problem. Because he definitely was not the business type. He later on became a consultant, and he especially became a PERT systems
in construction.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh.
Which was a very hot thing at that time.
Now,
project evaluation review technique.
Right, yeah.
Irv Scherer used to use it here a lot for our projects.
Yeah. So that was developed in the early 60s, huh?
Late 50s, early 60s, yeah.
How did how was your paper received at this meeting in terms of what you remember about it?
Very well. There was no significant criticism. I think a lot of the people that came were there because they were interested. I don't think they came to knock it. The people who were very super conservative probably didn't come. Machines were still calling it machines then. It wasn't computers, remember?
Right. Right.
So it was calculators.
It was advertised more as a conference dealing with machinable methods.
Methods and scientific documentation.
Yeah.
It was a symposium.
Now, also at this meeting, Saul Herner, who was at the Applied Physics Lab, gave his paper on...
Oh, that's right, yeah. Saul was a good... We had become friends.
Right.
I participated in one of his surveys. I did the interviews at Johns Hopkins Medical.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And was the...
It's where I always say the classic, going around asking people how to gather information, how they get information. This pharmacologist, I think it was Dr. Marshall, said to me, I do experiments. He didn't understand. I was thinking of library information.
Yeah,
But that was very, very, I think, very revealing that you're dealing with at an entirely different level when you're dealing with these scientists who are gathering information. It's something they're looking for. Either they get it in a lab, or if they could get it, if they thought they could get it in a library, they might. So it was very hard to push across the idea that the library should be the extension of the laboratory, or vice versa.
What was the reaction to these folks that you were interviewing as part of Herner's study? Now, his is about the second, the only one that I know much about. Maybe there were some others, but the most well-known one was the one the guy did that reported at the 48 conference. But user studies were practically unknown. What kind of reactions were you getting from these folks about that you talked to?
Varied. I really don't remember all that well. To me, it was a good experience because I got around to just meet users. Contributed to my awareness of what was missing in the way things were, and what was missing was timeliness, not so much complexity. And you got to remember, we're talking about an era when indexes were 3 and 4 years behind the literature. That sort of thing.
So this played a part in your thinking
process. Oh, sure.
You
talk to enough people, you find out what the hell people are doing to get information, and why would we have so many informal methods of getting information? Because you couldn't rely on the formal. Right? Journal articles, wasn't unusual for them to be 2 years late.
Now, you've said that most or many of your ideas that came out at ISI started
at the project. Yeah.
Certainly citation indexing, I think, hit you there first, and current contents, you described how current fits into that.
Even preoccupation with indexing chemical compounds. I was indexing, I was doing abstracting for chemical abstracts as part of, I did that so I would learn the process and everything, and we were, interested in searching chemicals files, and I mean, I was brought there because I was a chemist. So, and we were aware of the budding notation systems. I didn't meet Wiswesser until much later. But I was a member of the American Chemical Society already, meeting, going to those meetings.
And you continued to go to
Madeline Henderson and all those people were chemists.
Yeah. You were fired, you said.
Yeah.
Fired, not the project terminated or some combination.
I was fired.
With
not only that, they fired me and didn't even give me my vacation pay.
Really?
Yeah.
Why was Larkey so unhappy? I know you've talked about in the other interviews.
His excuse was that I refused to stop putting out current contents in advance. Which I consider to be a private project. I mean, it was not, it clearly had no effect on my work.
You were doing this on the side.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I can't even remember now how it was being done. We used to photograph four, put four on a page. I can't even remember where the hell I got it done.
But the idea came directly from the current list.
Yeah.
You saw this,
so to speak.
There.
Yeah. Yeah.
Said, only in this case,
I was photographing the content.
You were doing it in library literature or library documentation literature.
Right. Right.
Do you still have a copy around of that?
I don't know. It exists in different libraries. I think you could find
it. It's not in the Library of Congress unless...
Not in the Library of Congress?
Well,
Did you ever look at a union catalog for contents in advance?
I checked pre-56 mark records and came up with something called contents in advance. But if you look at the uniform title, that's a uniform title. That's not a real...
Well, for Prometheus House is the publisher subsequently.
Oh, it is.
That was when after Ann McCann. See, what happened was that after I left the project, I came up to New York, and I continued to publish it when I was in library school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? I met Ann McCann, was in my class at library school. And she and another, I think, March Crane was helping. We sort of all did it together.
Mm-hmm.
And we were using an outside printer to do it. And then later on, I turned it over to her. And she set up this company called Prometheus House. And she kept on publishing it until it died.
So this really could be it. Why is the title?
Oh, this is it. But
is the real title looks like it's Union List of Library Periodicals. You said the uniform title is Contents in Advance. That's a weird... Unless they've switched these around or something.
Something screwed up.
Well, I'm glad to know this is it, because I was afraid it didn't exist.
But remember, it started in 1953 or 52, late 52, because I couldn't have been doing it that long.
And you see the date there is not...
That's 55.
55.
That's, as I say, that's after I stopped doing it myself and gave it to Ann McCann.
Which makes me think somebody changed the title around, and this is not really the one that you put out. So I come back, think you can dig out a copy?
I don't know. I remember when I got married in 1955, I had a closet in the apartment. We lived in Woodbury, New Jersey. It was full of stacks and stacks of contents in advance. You know, which I unsold. My wife said, "We're not taking them with us."
So you tossed them, huh? I will check.
I don't.
I've checked the Penn catalog. I've checked the Drexel catalog. No luck.
Yeah.
Sharon, in your recollection, have you ever seen a company may have been dissatisfied on other levels?
That you were publishing it and that supposedly it was taking time away from the job. Huh?
There were other factors, I think, and also involved in his wanting to get rid of me.
Like?
Huh?
Like?
Probably he may have heard about political views that I had had when I was much younger.
It was the time, son.
Mm-hmm. There's a McCarthy era.
Yeah.
Okay. And there have been members of my mother's family who were communists and so on.
Reading about him and reading his just a few of his articles, he strikes me as a conservative man, very much a administrator, middle of the roader.
Well, Larkey was a combination of, well, he was a liberal. He was a liberal.
Was he?
His wife was a member of the National Democratic Committee.
Okay.
They were Democrats. I don't know if the story about how he was going to help me out. I got evicted from my room, apartment, a place for playing a saxophone, and I had to come down and appear in court. And he said, I'll come down and testify for you. He walked into the courtroom, and the Republican judge recognized him and immediately said to me, I mean, within 5 seconds, he said, Mr. Garfield, I expect you to be out of that place in 24 hours.
he strikes me as...
And then he was further upset when he found out later on I had moved to a place in the red light district in Baltimore so that I wouldn't be bothered by it. I had this big room over a drugstore where I could blow my horn as much as I wanted. And when he got there, one time I had gone on a weekend trip to Chicago to visit my girlfriend, and I had left a message I wouldn't be in on Monday or something. He got upset that I wasn't there. He went over to my apartment, and when he saw what it was, you know, where it was, which is very, very low-down district, he got me in the next day and said, that's not a respectable place for you to be living. You want to talk about a controlling person? Huh? So he did me a favor. He got me in so I could work even harder. He got me an apartment the size of a closet located over another pharmacy right in front of the emergency entrance of Johns Hopkins Hospital. Okay, so that's where I lived out the rest of my project days.
You could work at around the clock then.
Yeah, which I did.
Yeah.
No saxophone there.
Yeah. Now, the linkage between contents and advance and management's documentation preview.
Yes.
Are really pretty direct, right? Because you'd given up the one covering the
documentation. Yeah, this was in the management field, right.
Yeah. But the idea was you were still trying to do the same kind of thing. And by 56, you had incorporated as Documation Inc. in New Jersey. And
I don't know if that's the right year. 56, is it, or 54?
I think 56 is what was in the previous interview. But I'm not certain. Oh, but wait, before I get there, I want to talk about Columbia. Forget. Let's talk about Columbia. You said that you decided to go to library school because folks had said you need the credentials. Who was your advisor there? And let's just talk about general experiences.
Well, when I got into library school, I didn't have an advisor at first.
No?
There's no, you just sign up as a library student.
Uh-huh.
And I honestly can't remember how he found out about it. I guess somebody told me I applied for this. What happened was I applied for this fellowship. They call it the First Grolier Fellowship, which was sponsored by the Encyclopedia Americana. And when I filled out the recommendations, the list of my references was Werner W. Clapp, Chief Assistant Librarian of Congress, Ralph Shaw, Director of the National Agricultural Library, and Brad Rogers, were the director of the NLM. Do you think
they wouldn't turn you down? Yeah.
Now, Carl White was the dean. He was a wonderful, sweet man. I'm eternally in his gratitude. He was a wonderful man. He had been, as far as I understood, he was a theologian before. But he was just an incredibly gracious person. And so that $1,000 made the difference because I was supporting a child.
Yes. Talk about your impression. You had just come from one of the most advanced projects dealing with the whole
they
area.
They were unbelievably conservative. The guy's name was Maury Tauber.
Maury.
Famous Tauber, Maurice Tauber, cataloging expert.
Right.
Everybody had told this story before, but years later, during one of the student revolts, I came to see him, and he told me about how the students had locked him up in his room.
Really?
And I said to Maury, that was a great idea. I wish I had thought of that when I was here.
So your impressions, even at the time, were of tremendous conservatism?
But he was always very nice to me. I mean, I'll tell you an example of it. I and a half a dozen or a dozen other students formed what we called the Documentation Club. Strictly extracurricular activity, and each meeting one of us would give a lecture on what we had known about or worked on. I talked about citation indexing. We had a guy from India who talked about colon classification. We had a fellow who later on became one of the librarians at New York Public Library but had come from industry, Bob Krupp. Spoke about patents, all the things you never heard about in library school. Okay?
No one was talking about those things in class?
No. Patents? You gotta be kidding. In library school? Citation indexes? Come on.
Well, citation index.
What was the colon classification? No way.
Tauber didn't mention it.
He was mentioned?
Classification.
Well, maybe the word was mentioned.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No one talking about machine
methods. I mean, you know, all these other, all these other stuff. I can't remember the other things we talk about. So maybe microphone. But the unique thing about it was not one faculty member ever showed up.
What kind of student attendance did you have?
Oh, reasonable.
No, we
wouldn't have continued if we hadn't had a student. And I became very good friends with all those guys. I've met a lot. Columbia was the international school. We had students from all over the world, and I later on I became a wonderful thing for me. I had a librarian in Thailand that I knew, a librarian from Sri Lanka that I knew, and so on. Norway, he was a member of the club too. he was a mathematician librarian from University of Trondheim, a technology librarian, and I forget what he talked about, but mathematical stuff. And, what was his name? Knut something or other. I mean, I saw him until quite a few years before he died, you know. So it was a wonderful
but
experience.
But none of this was going on within the classrooms.
No.
Now, you finished the MLS program in 54, and I gather immediately started to work on your PhD there? But not in the library school, right?
Not anywhere. I couldn't get anywhere.
But, I mean, you took some coursework. I have that you took about 60 hours at Columbia.
Yeah.
On PhD program.
Well, some of those courses may have been before library school, and some would be after or during. I'm not sure. Because I did take a course at the IBM Watson Institute, which is located a block away from the university. So a lot of those graduate credits were probably assembled even before I got to library school.